Chapter 3. Cardenia Wu Patrick woke up a half hour before her alarm was set because her lover, Mars, was a snorer. Normally, Cardenia was able to filter it out, background white noise that the brain knew to discount and discard. But for the last couple of days, Mars had been fighting a cold, which made his snoring both louder and more random. When it woke Cardenia up, Mars sounded like he was two cavemen having a very urgent conversation with each other about discovering fire or hunting a feral hog or something else along that line. Cardenia didn't mind. She found it endearing. She and Mars were still early enough in their relationship that their faults were still endearing rather than annoying to each other. Or at least Cardenia still found Mars's faults endearing. And Mars was either too gallant or too circumspect to say anything about hers. Cardenia idly wondered if they would ever get to the point where faults weren't endearing, and rather than amusedly tolerating his snoring, she would seek to smother him with a pillow. She had never been in a relationship that lasted that long. She imagined that, even as she was smothering her beloved, she would be delighted that they had managed to get to that point. In the meantime, she lay there, arm draped across Mars's chest, as the conversation between the two cavemen that he was snoring out came to a conclusion and the participants decamped, perhaps in search of a mastodon. Mars quieted down to his usual light level of snore. Cardenia lightly ran her fingers across his chest, not so lightly as to tickle him, but not heavily enough to wake him, and not for the first time marveled that the two of them had gotten together. It was unlikely for several reasons, and yet, here they were. She stayed there for several minutes more, resting in that liminal area between dozing and full wakefulness, enjoying the warmth of Mars radiating into her. Then 5 minutes before she knew her alarm would wake them both, she sighed, grumbled slightly, and slid herself out of bed, careful not to wake her lover. The slippers and robe were where she had placed them the evening before. She put herself into each and then whispered at the clock to dismiss the alarm. She needed to go to work, but there was no reason Mars couldn't sleep in. Maybe the cavemen would come back for a further conference. Cardenia showered, toweled, brushed her hair into submission, and then, in her dressing room, put on undergarments and a dressing gown. At this point, she had two options. One, walk through a door to her immediate left, behind which waited her wardrobe, hair and makeup crew, along with Neera Chernin, her morning staffer who would go over her day's itinerary, which would go from the instant she stepped out of makeup to some as-yet-indeterminate point roughly 12 to 15 hours in the future, and possibly later than that. Two, walk through another door entirely and have a conversation with those who lay beyond it. Going through this second door would not allow her to avoid dealing with Chernin and all the rest of her minions. It would just delay the inevitable by however long it was she chose to stay. And either way, it would not change the fact that, through the mere act of stepping through a doorway, she would stop being Cardenia Wu Patrick and become Greyland II, Emperor of the Holy Empire of the Interdependent States and Mercantile Guilds, Queen of Hub and Associated Nations, Head of the Interdependent Church, Successor to Earth and Mother to All, 88th Emperor of the House of Wu. Cardenia looked at both doors, sighed, and walked to the second one, which opened for her without prompting. Greyland II stepped through. The room into which Greyland had entered was large and sparse to the point of being almost featureless. Only a long bench, molded straight out of the wall, offered a break in the room's clean and almost antiseptic lines. It was perhaps a room not meant to be loitered in. Nevertheless, Greyland sat herself on the bench, made herself as comfortable as it allowed, and called for the room's primary occupant.
"Gigi," Greyland said.
Hidden projectors flicked on, and in the middle of the room, a sexless, genderless humanoid being was called into existence. It looked to Greyland, walked over to her sitting form, and nodded.
"Emperor Greyland II,"
Gigi said, as it always did.
"How may I assist you?"
Greyland considered the form standing before her. This room was called the Memory Room. The thoughts and emotional states of every single previous emperor were in it, down to the very first, the Prophet Emperor Raikela I, recorded by a neural network that each emperor, including Greyland, had embedded in their brains. GE was the interface each living emperor used to access their predecessors. All one had to do was ask to see one, and GE would bring them out, one at a time or together, as many as the living emperor wished to speak to. All the previous emperors, save one, thought that had been all there was to GE, an interface to other emperors with some basic AI for other general information retrieval. But Greyland had recently learned that Raykela I, the first emperor, had built GE with another function entirely, to seek out and find hidden information throughout the interdependency. In this task, GE was neither fast nor efficient. Some hidden information could take years or even decades to come to GE's databases, but what GE lacked in speed and guile, it made up for in relentlessness. Sooner or later, everything hidden was revealed to GE. And now, because she knew, to Greyland as well.
"Darren Wu has been dead for 12 hours now," Greyland said to GE. "Do you know who did it yet?"
"I do not," GE said.
"Have you discovered anything that might suggest a specific culprit?"
"After his murder became public, there was a surge of communications from high-ranking members of important noble and mercantile houses," GE said. "These communications were all encrypted, as is standard with nearly all their communication. It will take me some time to access them, either through decryption or other means."
"Define what some time means here."
"If I need to use brute force decryption, it can take decades. This is usually not necessary because there are other routes to get the information, such as accessing security cameras that show the screens with the information."
"Hugh, read over their shoulder," Greyland mused.
"Yes," GE said. "At the moment, none of the secure messages I've seen indicate certain knowledge of events, save for the communications from eyewitnesses themselves."
"And none of them have written anything about sending final payments on a contract?"
"No."
Greyland scrunched up her face. "Because that would make my life easier, you know, if you found all that today."
"I understand,"
GE said. And Greyland wondered, not for the first time, if GE really did. GE was, by design, as aggressively blank as the memory room.
"Is there any new information that you have that I should be aware of?"
"About Darren Wu's assassination, or in a more general sense?"
"About both."
"No other information about Darren Wu. More generally, several of the noble houses have secretly begun to transfer some of their wealth to End and are planning to have key and critical members of each house follow."
Greyland II nodded at this. She didn't need a secret-sniffing, millennium-old artificial intelligence to tell her that it had finally sunk into the heads of the noble families and the mercantile guilds they controlled that the flow was actually collapsing, and that maybe they would want to preserve at least some of their wealth and send it to the one place in the interdependency that, in theory, had the capability to survive beyond a few decades at best. She had enough legitimate security and financial reports to signal that. They would take up at least some of her day today and, she suspected, progressively more of her days to come.
"Worry about that later," she thought.
She was in the memory room for the death of Darren Wu and what the implications of that were. GE, for all its usefulness, was not the person she needed to speak to about that. She needed someone who had actual lived experience dealing with the interdependency and the noble houses, and specifically the House of Wu. She asked GE for one person in particular. "Dead from his tea," said the Emperor Ottavio VI, or more accurately, the exquisitely rendered simulation of him. In addition to being the former Emperor, Ottavio VI also happened to be Greyland's father. Greyland nodded and then grimaced.
"Well, we don't know if it was Darren's tea. The teacup itself might have been poisoned. Or there might have been components in both the tea and the cup that would become a poison when mixed together. The investigators are still looking into it."
"But it was definitely poison," said Ottavio VI.
"Oh, yes."
There was no effort to disguise the poisoning, as a heart attack or a stroke, for example.
"No."
"There are no obvious suspects."
"Darren's personal assistant, Witka Chinlan, served him the tea and was questioned about it. They're keeping her in custody. But as I understand it, no one considers it likely that she knew about the poison. She's apparently in shock and is cooperating fully."
"You feel bad for her?"
"She poisoned her boss unintentionally, Dad. That's a lot."
"Yes, it is," Ottavio VI agreed. You're telling me all of this for a reason. What is it?
I wanted to know what you thought about it.
I don't think anything about it. I don't actually think. Greyland bit her cheek for a minute, holding back a thought, as it related to Ottavio VI, Gyi, and all the other emperors. And then, remembering that the Ottavio VI in front of her was indeed a simulation, she said it anyway.
I don't think that's true.
That I don't actually think?
Yes. We've been doing this too long, and I've had too many conversations with you where you ask questions and offer advice. You couldn't do that if you didn't think.
That's not accurate, Ottavio VI said. At least in the way you think about thinking. This simulation is very good at heuristic approximation. I can offer supposition informed by my life experience and based on the stored model of how I thought when I was alive.
That's pretty much what thinking is,
Greyland said to herself, but stopped herself from voicing the thought. She was aware that, once again, she was getting pulled into the teleological weeds about the fact that she could have a conversation with her dead father, or a facsimile thereof, and that this was not going to help her with her current set of issues. Greyland sighed.
Our civilization is collapsing, and yet Darren Wu still got poisoned,
Greyland II thought. If nothing else, it marked a commitment to nefariousness that Greyland could almost respect if it hadn't also made her life more complicated. Ottavio VI, or the facsimile thereof, stood patiently while his daughter ran all of this through her head. He would stand patiently for years, if necessary. The reanimated dead were nothing, if not patient.
Let me rephrase, Greyland said to the apparition of her father. What would you have thought about it, when you could have thought about it?
Darren's death is meant to send a message, Ottavio VI replied.
How do you mean?
Your cousin was openly assassinated, poisoned with his favorite tea. There was no attempt to hide the fact that he'd been poisoned, which would have been relatively easy to do. Whoever killed him wanted it known that he had been killed.
Terrorism?
Greyland suggested. Possibly, Ottavio VI agreed. Or it could be something else.
Has any organization claimed the death?
The usual groups who claim anything awful that happens, Greyland said. My security people say none of them had anything to do with it. So no serious claims for the assassination?
No.
Then it's possible that it's not terrorism, Ottavio VI said. Or if it is, that its goal is a long-term one, not one for immediate gain.
Like what?
I don't have enough information to go on. Who would want Darren Wu dead? Greyland smirked at that. Roughly half the noble houses, a large number of military officers and ministers of parliament, and probably every single member of the former governing board of the House of Wu. And you, Ottavio VI said.
Excuse me?
Greyland blinked at this. If memory serves, Darren Wu was part of the conspiracy against your rule. Greyland smiled briefly at this comment and at its implicit acknowledgement that a simulation of a dead man would have knowledge of an event that took place long after his passing.
He turned against the conspiracy and gave up all its members, she said.
As may be. You wouldn't be the first emperor to benefit from a turncoat's information, only to move against him later.
Did you?
Greyland narrowed her eyes at her father.
Assassinate anyone like that?
No.
Did you have anyone assassinated?
Not openly, Ottavio VI said.
Not openly?
Assassination was not a tool I preferred to use. That said, there may have been times where I wished that someone would rid me of a turbulent priest.
You had priests killed?
Greyland was not aware of her father having any trouble with the Church of the Interdependency, which he would have been the nominal head of, as she was now. It's an expression, Ottavio VI said. You can look it up. My point is that I chose not to have assassination as part of my statecraft. You might ask your grandmother her thoughts about it, however. She would be likely to give you a very different answer. Greyland thought of Zishan III, her paternal grandmother, and gave a little shudder. Zishan III would not be remembered well by history, what little of it remained at this point. Ottavio VI noticed the shudder. I am understanding that you also choose not to indulge in assassination.
No, I don't.
That's probably wise.
Probably?
Assassination is never clean and always has consequences. But you rule in turbulent times, Ottavio IV said. Greyland noted the reappearance of the word turbulent.
You have survived 2 near-successful assassinations and 1 near-successful coup attempt. You might not be judged too harshly if you, as emperor, decided to speed up the justice that those who conspired against you deserved. Greyland considered the list of people who might be on her list if she had one. It would be enough to keep her security forces busy until the interdependency definitively collapsed.
"We have other, more pressing concerns," she said.
"Probably wise," Ottavio VI repeated. "If it wasn't you who decided to end your cousin's life, then it's best to start going down the list of people who would and see where that leads." This got a nod from Greyland. "This is presuming that you have any interest in discovering who assassinated him," Ottavio VI added, "aside from a natural pro forma investigation."
"Of course I do."
"I repeat, he was part of a conspiracy against you."
"Yes, but aside from anything else, his death does me no good," Greyland said. "He was meant to control the House of Wu and keep it in line. Now he's dead, and the members of the governing board are already fighting among themselves for control. If Darren is the only Wu cousin who is assassinated in the next few months, we should count ourselves lucky."
"Technically, you are the head of the House of Wu," Ottavio VI pointed out. "Technically, the Emperor hasn't tried to run the House of Wu for centuries," Greyland said. "I was already out of my cousin's good graces for cutting out the board and putting Darren solely in charge. And I got away with that only because Jason Wu had moved against me, so I had pretext to be suspicious. Unless there's obvious evidence someone on the board murdered him, I have no political pretext to be involved. If I insert myself again, the resistance is going to be impressive. I can't afford that, not now." Ottavio VI cocked his head. "You have recently crushed a rebellion. You should have political capital to burn." Another smile from Greyland, this one rueful. "You would think that, Father. But as you said, times are turbulent." "As you knew they would be, as I warned you when you took on the crown."
"Yes, you did," Greyland said. "You also said that you thought I wouldn't be ready to deal with it all. Do you remember that?"
"I remember," Ottavio VI said.
"What do you think now?"
Greyland held up her hand.
"What I mean is, what would you think if you could think now?"
Ottavio VI paused. Intellectually, Greyland was aware that this pause was unnecessary and inserted into Ottavio's simulation because the memory room was aware that at a moment like this, when two humans were having a conversation of this sort, there would likely be a pause while the responding human organized their thoughts to reply coherently. The pause was there to give Greyland a more psychologically authentic human experience, nothing more. It didn't keep Greyland, in the space of that brief pause, from having a rush of feeling, a feeling she was being judged and found wanting, and that her father, or the facsimile thereof, was trying to find a kind way of telling her that she wasn't up to it. Sorry.
"You're not up to it," Ottavio VI said bluntly.
"Then?"
"But then again, who could be?"
Greyland exhaled, and in doing so was made aware she had been holding her breath.
"Thank you for putting in that last part," she said.
"I didn't do it out of sympathy."
"I know, you're not programmed that way. Thank you anyway."
"You're welcome," Ottavio VI said.
"With respect to your cousin's assassination, what do you intend to do next?"
"Nothing directly," Greyland said. "My security and the other investigators are already working on it. As I said, I have more pressing concerns."
"You still came to talk to me about it."
"I figured another emperor might know something about assassination."
"I'm not sure that I told you anything you didn't already know."
"You didn't," Greyland agreed.
"But you don't exist. So you could be dispassionate about it."
"And I think you're right. This was meant to send a message. We just need to decipher to whom."
"That would depend on who was behind the assassination," Ottavio VI said. "And, as you said, there are no obvious suspects."
"There aren't," Greyland said. "But I can guess."